Blog Talk Radio.
So y'all was in Iraq together?
Yeah, we was in Iraq.
What did you do?
We was looking for weapons of mass destruction.
Did you ever find them?
You know goddamn well we ain't find them. What are you, some kind of political humorist? You Gary Trudeau up in this bitch?
I was looking for bitches, but they had that carpet shit all over them, and I couldn't see what they looked like. All that was really exposed was the eyes, and that wasn't enough for me, because, you know, I'm looking at the eyes can be pretty, and I take that carpet off, and then I got a tragedy.
Well, no, we ain't fine. But I always say the absence of evidence is not the evidence of absence.
What?
Simply because you don't have evidence that something does exist does not mean that you have evidence that something doesn't exist.
What?
What country you from?
What?
What ain't no country I ever heard of. They speak English in what?
What?
English, motherfucker! Do you speak it?
Yeah.
So you understand the words I'm saying to you?
Yeah.
Well, what I'm saying is that there are known knowns and that there are known unknowns, but there's also unknown unknowns. Things we don't know that we don't know.
What?
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you. I double dare you, motherfucker. Say what one more time?
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
I can't wait. I sincerely can't wait till the Boondocks comes back on air. Will Aaron Magruder get off his butt and get this thing cracking? Folks, welcome to a double dose, double feature, Grindhouse edition of Afternoon Radio, Sunday, January 13th, 2013. Folks, the call-in number, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Of course, this is the first inning. And the second inning is at 7 p.m. with Afternoon Radio, a.k.a. Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. Before we get into the pulp-flavored discourse, let's get into some nerdcore groove. This is Saturday Morning Cartoons, a Redux Gigantor. For those anime fans, early anime fans, Gigantor performed by Helmet. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove.
Gigantor, 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 Gigantor,
Okay, enough of that. Once again, that was Helmet, a redux of Saturday morning cartoons Gigantor, for those early anime fans. Okay, folks, again, it's the Comic Shop. Could not do it, not effectively, not this broadcast without my crew, without my own X-Men. This time up, the Captain. What's up? Let's get to it, Captain.
Yes, sir. Let's do it. Let's do it.
All right, and of course, the uncanny Daryl.
I'm confused as to what timeline I'm in right now, so hi, everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, folks, we have a lot to cover, as always. It seems like every week there's a deluge of comic books, sci-fi, video gaming. It just never stops, and if you're into this kind of stuff like we are, it is, dare I say, orgasmic or close to. If you're into this kind of stuff, it's every week there's something going on. If I think there's a lull, every once in a while I'll say, you know, maybe there's a lull. Nope. Right before this broadcast, I had my set list of topics. I go to comicbookmovie.com, folks. There's more crap that we haven't even discussed. You know, I'm going to put it in there, but it wasn't even set to be discussed. So this time around, first up, I want to talk about something that's disappointing me. And I hope that this fight continues, but I've seen this fight before, and usually it ends badly. Daryl, your opinion of Disney XD's Tron Uprising. I love this cartoon. It's actually gotten better toward the end of this first season. And lo and behold, because I checked the numbers, I said, okay, these numbers are not going to be able to sustain this show. And it was tweeted out by one of the creators that it's set to be canceled. Now, since he mentioned it, there's a little bit of a rumble that he says, well, maybe I'm speaking too quickly. He said what I saw. He said, well, these numbers are not sustainable, will probably be canceled. He tweeted that out. People are upset. Now there's a petition. But, Daryl, what are your thoughts on Tron Uprising, Disney XD?
Well, I look at it this way. They tried to go in a different direction with Tron, and I thought it was okay. I thought the series was okay, but as usual, you know, as long as, okay, that's the first, all right, first season, all right, it's the first season. All right, now they got their feet wet. Now we'll see what happens season two in terms of quality. You know, will it rise? Will it fail? You know, it's one of those things. A thing like this that's not going to be a hit series right off the bat. I'm sorry. Especially with its competition in-house and out-of-house with the Spider-Man, the Ultimate Spider-Mans, the Young Justices, the Green Lanterns. I mean, kids are now discovering Tron. It's not like us back in the day. Us back in the day, we knew Tron, we knew everything because Kurt Russell, you know, the Disney movies that used to be shown constantly. But kids today are now discovering it through the movie. You know, and it's not that quick grab to them, all right? And you needed to give this a little space. The problem is, somebody goes ahead and makes the harebrained decision, oh, we need to take it off the air. Why? Right. There's enough jokes in there for kids, but enough action there for kids. Meanwhile, us adults are enjoying some of the political and social overtones being presented by the story. You know, everything can't be Adventure Time. Everything can't be regular show. Everything can't be that. Could we have cartoons where, okay, kids love the action and it makes us think? Could we have that? Obviously not. Cap?
Well, pertaining to this particular series, I thought it was all right. I didn't think it was any big thing. But even, you know, when a big wig or a suit comes in and they themselves say they want the series to stay around, they themselves eventually succumb to the numbers. You may have a little power, or should I say a lot of power, as far as the suit is concerned. But even them, after a period of time, they have to succumb to the numbers. You have to have the numbers at the end of the day. So we shall see what happens down the line. Also, power does go to the people. Sometimes when you make enough rumbling via the internet and via other things, the suits turn around and listen and say, let's keep this moving. Let's watch it. Let's see if it can go stronger. Back over to you, Sir Alpha Nerd.
Yeah, let me do what I always do. I know Daryl probably hates this part, but I'm going to have to go into the history a little bit, and then we're going to move along. Of course, folks, if you are part of the uninitiated, Tron, well, first of all, this Tron Uprising animated effort is supposed to take place after Tron Legacy, and I guess before the next installment. So it's in between the last Tron series, the Tron reboot, and the next Tron that's forthcoming. For those who are unfamiliar with Tron, again, it goes back to the 1981, 1982 with Jeff Bridges as the titular character. And the funny thing of it is that many of the voice characterization in Tron Uprising has top flight A-level talent in this, as well as some of the folks from the original Tron. Bruce Boxleitner is in, who plays an employee of Tron, the Jeff Bridges character. Bruce Boxleitner, he's in this as a voice actor. He's in this movie. Pee Wee Herman, Paul Rubens, has a voice character in this thing. Reginald Bell Johnson, who played Urkel's father in Family Matters, he does a voice characterization in this. And I think Olivia Munn, Olivia Wilde, I forgot her name. She's the hot actress of the moment.
Olivia Wilde, yeah.
She's in this thing. Olivia Wilde. She's in this thing as well. So it would be a shame that for them to get the type of talent that they have involved in this thing, and for them, a matter of fact, Frodo himself, isn't he in this as well, Daryl?
Yeah. It's a lot of A-list. I should say a total A-list, but it's a lot of guys you wouldn't expect to be doing animated efforts, or you're surprised to hear their names being used in that. But more and more, you're seeing it. when we get into the DC movie thing coming up next week, for the list of the characters they have lined up for the Superman shocks me. But there's big name actors that want to blend their voices to animated efforts now. It's a big thing now.
Yeah, very big. I was looking at something. The latest Batman Dark Knight Returns Part 2, which is coming out in 2 weeks. I was surprised to hear even more. Conan O'Brien does a voiceover of a talk show host in the next Batman animated movie, which is coming up by the end of this month. So you're hearing more and more folks that you, as Daryl just said, that you would not necessarily expect to be connected to an animated film, comic book film. They're doing more of this stuff. You know, if you really do the research, there's a lot of people that you just wouldn't think they would do this. But it's an excellent way to hone your chops, and it's easy work if you can get it. There's no costuming. There's no makeup. It's you in a sound booth, and it shows if you can emote. So I think it's an excellent thing. But back to Tron Uprising, I've been sticking with this thing for a while, but the only thing of it is that Disney XD animation, for whatever reason, I don't know if you find the same thing, Daryl, but it's like the timing of their properties are weird. You know, it's like 7 o'clock at night or whatever. It's, you know, it's not really ideal for animation. You know, when they have what's the other thing that's doing very well, getting great numbers? Korra. course, like 11 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday or
well,
something
they,
like that.
They don't have that.
But these other
Nickelodeon does.
Yeah, right. So that's what I'm getting at. The fact that another property, another cable company has this, and they have it at a time where it's more conducive for, you know, for viewers. And also, you know, listen, it's a lush-looking animation series. I mean, it's very impressive-looking, and it's, you know, it flows rather nicely from Tron Legacy. It does flow nicely from that series. It's just that it's very mature. It's at the evening. I don't know who the intended audience is for, considering some of the subject matter. And it kind of has a Logan's Run appeal, too. I mean, there's a lot of things going on with it, but I've been sticking with it, but I get it. You know, I look at it online. I'm not looking at it. I'm probably at fault partially for why it's doing poorly because if they're not recording my numbers. And I look at it when I can look at it. I look at it when I can, but I've kept up with it. So I know fully, I'm fully immersed in this storyline, but I knew in the back of my mind, this is too good. This is too good, and therefore it's not going to stick around. I mean, it is what it is. Do you think that's partially it too, Daryl, that it, you know, it seems to be cooking rather nice towards the 14th or 15th episode?
Well, that's just it. With all of these shows, whether it be live action, whether it be when it comes to animated or sci-fi fantasy, you know, you need to give the show 10 episodes. You need to roll in through 10 episodes before you can really make a judgment because they're going to try a lot of things, throw a lot of things, and see what sticks with the audience. You know, you can't make a snap judgment right away. Tron Uprising was very slow for the first 3 or 4 episodes. And then as it went through the season, you could see they found their balance. They found their balance between the action and the political stuff, and it started to gain traction. All right? The problem is you let a report like this leak out, and people will be like, oh, well, why am I going to waste time? Why am I going to go hunt for it on TV and stuff? They're just going to cancel it. I'll just look at it online later. Case in point, Afro-Nerd.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, listen, let's go to a quick group, gentlemen. When we get back, I want to talk about Elementary, that I was impressed with Elementary, I think the captain as well, this past week. I'm sticking with it because I am a Sherlock Holmes stan. Whatever the interpretation is, heck, I was a House stan. For those who are may not have known this, House was essentially an interpretation of Holmes. So anyone that comes up with a House version, I mean, sorry, of a Sherlock Holmes version of something, I'm going to like it. But I've always said this, the Sherlock English UK version is superior to me to Elementary, although this past week it got a little grimy. It got a little grimy, and probably because just as in typical lore, Sherlock Holmes lore, Moriarty, his arch nemesis, I guess Sherlock's Joker, finally makes an appearance, sort of. I was wondering when that was going to happen. So that's when, I guess that's probably why things started to get a little grimy, which I like. And also, UK's Vinnie Jones, one of my favorite character actors, very, very known for being a menacing character actor. He makes an appearance as well. So before we get into Elementary, let's get into a quick nerdcore groove. This is, and I can appreciate the title, Never Watch Doctor Who. Never Watch Doctor Who by Adam Warrock. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove.
And I don't really understand what everyone is talking about. BBC don't even get in my house, so it seems that I'm living without a television show everyone's gushing about. They're like, Doctor What? I'm like, Doctor Who? And it's like a record stops in the room. So I'm supposed to care about a debonair dude who wears a bow tie and everyone's watching it too. And I ain't here to hate. I mean, I really don't know enough info to join the debate. Do I have to watch episodes on videotape? I mean, didn't it start way back in 1978? Or maybe 1992? I mean, tell me, what am I trying to prove? I watch Firefly, I watch Freaks and Geeks, I watch All the Wire, and every day of the week, someone is telling me, hey Eugene, you watch a new episode of Doctor Who number 5000. The number don't sound right to me. Why are you trying to pick a fight with me? Come on, man.
I don't even understand what anybody's talking about. You know, but I can sing this. I'll sing it.
I never watched Doctor Who.
Folks, you're listening to The Comic Shop. That was Never Watch Doctor Who by the great Adam Warrock. And we've spoken about this before. It is kind of funny for me, especially because I have never watched Doctor Who. I would like to, but the series dates back, you know, in its original incarnation back to 1963, and it's still running. So it's just funny that way for some reason, but I can appreciate that title. All right. Folks, again, don't be scared. Call the number 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. All right, you know, behind the scenes, I was speaking to the captain, and we were talking about how great Elementary, the TV series of Lucy Liu, which is, you know, listen, this version, our version, the American version of, I guess, the Sherlock series with Benedict Cumberbatch, which is, you know, getting all kinds of accolades, and that is like the show, Sherlock. And I think it's returning probably within the next couple of weeks for this year. But I'm sticking with Elementary also. I'm beginning to get into it. I mean, you know, listen, I make no bones. I like Lucy Liu. She's an attractive actress, and she's got some chops also. But Johnny Lee Miller, I would be remiss in mentioning him. Johnny Lee Miller is the actor that plays Sherlock Holmes, and he's doing a very good job on him as well. But this time around, this particular episode, we meet, in a way, we get introduced to Moriarty, which is essentially, if you're going to make comparisons between Batman and Sherlock Holmes, Moriarty would definitely be his intellectual equal, but on the evil side. Just like Joker, many have said, is a mirror image or almost like a funhouse mirror image of Batman, Moriarty is Sherlock Holmes's Joker. So this particular episode was pretty cool. I have to admit, it was engrossing. It was a kind of emotional arc for the Holmes character. There was talk about, at least in the plot line, that Watson, and of course, for those who may not be in the know, Watson is a female in this particular iteration, played by Lucy Liu. And there was talk about her, at least as a character in this vehicle, that she was going to leave. You know, she's there to help him as a drug counselor, and that she felt. But the funny thing is that she didn't really. She was a medical doctor, just like in the original Watson. She's a medical doctor. Grew out of favor with an incident that left her scarred emotionally. I believe a patient died on her, so she left medicine, ended up becoming a drug counselor, but then she has to admit that she's fascinated. She is fascinated by homes. She's fascinated, but she doesn't want to admit that. And we don't know if there's going to be some kind of interaction. It's that whole who's the boss, Tony Danza thing going on, too. Maybe by season 10, when everybody's fully paid and the Brinks truck has rolled in, will they finally confess their affection for each other? I don't know. Anyway, Daryl, did you see last week's Elementary episode?
Yeah, I did. And you guys are going gaga over it. Again, I'm giving it a chance to grow. I'm like, okay, all right. So that's going to be you prove to me that you're his equal now. You're going to have to flesh him out. You're going to have to make him give just as much screen time to him as you do Holmes. You know, you're going to have to flesh out the villain. You know, because like we said, like I say constantly, like the captain said, your hero is only as good as the villain is great. You know, hey, Holmes has been doing regular crime here, all right? This is a chance to really flesh out a character to be his true nemesis. And I wish him luck with it. Back to you.
Well, as expected, Dow's not going to agree with me, you know, on everything. Captain, what are your thoughts on this thing? I mean, you've been, you know, fair with the show. You thought the show was pretty moderate at best. But this particular one, you thought was a flash of, okay, maybe there's something else going on here. So you weren't, you know, you're kind of slow on this as well.
Well, the reality of it is, just as you said, I was very moderate. I like the actor playing Sherlock Holmes. He's very eccentric, crazy, as Sherlock Holmes is. You know, New York, doing the New York version. That was fine. I figured right from the beginning, I said, this is going to pick up. It's all right. It's watchable. Not terrible. You know, I said, okay, it's okay. I could deal with this. And, you know, in this particular episode, as Daryl B. says, and as I always say, it's about the villain. They stepped it up with the villain. That's why this episode was so much better in comparison to all the other episodes. The villain was better. So it took a massive leap in the right direction. So now this opens things up. And it will probably hold me for another 10 episodes to say, okay, let me see now. Let me see if they're going to maintain this level or take it even higher. Because they could take it even higher, then this becomes huge. That episode was what I consider a good episode. Before everything, it was just okay. That was a good episode. Now, if they can go higher than that, the last episode that we just saw that we're talking about right now, this will be huge. That's all I have to say about it. So time will tell.
Yeah, but if they go higher and make it huge, that would require Lucy Liu and what's the dude's name again? They would need
Johnny
to take
Miller.
Johnny Lee Miller. They would need to take a step back out of the spotlight and allow Moriarty to really actually get an episode here, you know, to build him up. I mean, it'd be great. You don't see that in regular television anymore where the heroes of a show like this really take the back seat and allow a secondary character to get built up. And, I mean, that might lead to a payoff, a great payoff, as the captain just said. And it's something that British TV, they do all the time, where you have a villain-centric episode where you get to build up a threat for the hero. We'll see what Elementary does.
Yeah, well, listen, in all fairness, though, this is what this is, though. This particular episode, you didn't even see Moriarty. This episode is a build-up. The fact that you had the type of murder case that it was, where the audience was led in one direction and found out that it was actually another person, you know, Vinny Jones is a tall, menacing character actor. I mean, that's essentially, you know, he's, I don't want to say he's, well, in a way, he's kind of typecast that way. He's a perfect villain. He himself is a perfect villain. And when you found out that he wasn't the guy, you know, it's kind of, Moriarty is coming. So I thought that that was pretty much, I mean, you're acting as if they're not doing that. I mean, they're kind of leading you, you know, the buildup is there. They're building it up like, okay, who is this guy? It's like, you know, before James Brown comes on, he's got to go through introductions. I mean, you know, you know, they hold off to the big event. So they're making it kind of a buildup to who Moriarty is. We haven't even seen the guy, and yet we're already discussing him. I mean, that was in itself kind of lends to what you're saying.
Well, I'm looking at it as classic comic kind of buildup, you know, where we've seen his machinations taking place, but
right.
Will they give the character an equal amount of time? That's all I'm saying. You could play. I look at it like a reverse Twin Peaks type of thing. You could give me the villain, or you could give me the conspiracy all you want. But the villain has to earn the payoff later, if you catch what I'm meaning. You know, you got to actually care about the character playing the villain.
Well, you know, first of all, it'll be interesting to see who will be the actor portraying Moriarty. Because one thing I do agree with you on is that Moriarty truly is the opposite side of the coin of Sherlock Holmes. He's equally as intellectually curious, intellectually adept. He is an excellent chess mate for Holmes. I mean, he has Holmes scrambling. And he has Holmes scrambling now. The guy was, you know, tearful. He was, you know, which I didn't necessarily like that part, but I mean, I have to accept it. You know, Holmes isn't really prone to emotion. So I guess, you know, for people, some folks might dig that part. That part was a little unsettling for me. Because Holmes is always almost has Asperger's syndrome. That's what that character kind of has, that inability to be social. You know, he's very dismissive with Watson, but Watson still finds it fascinating. But you could tell he has difficulty relating to people, and that's part of his brilliance. But the fact that now he's become human because of the death of his girlfriend. And, you know, he had a whole thing going on here. Actually, that's the one thing about Elementary, that you know, America, they have to Americanize everything. They have to Americanize everything. Cumberbatch's Holmes, even though it's a modern Holmes, is still very much quintessential Holmes. You know, we don't even know what Holmes' sexuality is. You know, that is in because he's so out of it, you know, it would have to be some really over the top woman that raises his ire, gets him. And actually, we saw that in the Cumberbatch version of Holmes, where this girl who actually we thought was dead and wasn't, you found out that she is a female version of Holmes. That's why he likes her. Any old girl would not intrigue. Holmes likes puzzles. So the woman in his life would have to be a puzzle, just as the villain in his life would have to be a puzzle. Holmes is as much a basket case as everybody, anybody else that would gain his interest in a weird way. That's what makes Holmes a fascinating character. So we will see. I agree with you on this much. Will he get equal screen time? What kind of actor will he be? You know, you just can't have some guy there that's just like, you know, just anybody. He has to be a chess player in order for it to work. I just thought that after all the kind of moderate episodes up until this one, maybe this might be the turning point. Maybe. I'm just saying.
And you know, up until this point, up until before that, I had a discussion with a friend before it. And I was like, you know what? They've been turning everything in this show on its ear. Wouldn't it be interesting if Moriarty was a woman? because that's something that Sherlock Holmes really, he's never faced a woman mastermind. I thought they made the Buck tradition doing it like that. But all the hints that Vinnie Jones gave during this one leads me to believe that the whole Moriarty is going to be a man totally. But I thought that, again, that's me thinking ahead with comic psychology. Huh. That would might be a pretty nice curveball for this Holmes and Watson tandem. But, hey, I got the following, so, you know.
You already have Watson as a female. They're not going to push that. You know.
Hey, I'm just saying, it would have been a nice curveball to see. You know, a female mastermind. There hasn't been many of those outside of bad soap operas.
They're going to make him into his father.
Oh, man.
That's who it is.
All right. Let's do another turnaround, gentlemen. I want to talk about, I guess this is good news, but there's a number of properties that I've been wishing that we're going to make it to the silver screen or the small screen. And they were touted about heavily. We thought they were on the fast track. Then all of a sudden, they implode and then they disappear. Now they're reappearing. I'm hearing AKA Jessica Jones, which is Jessica Jones, for those who are in the know, is the detective, former superhero, and in the comics, present wife of Luke Cage. But when she had her own series, the series was entitled Alias, not Jennifer Garner's Alias, but Alias nevertheless, and it was a very well-received series. And we heard that it was fast-tracked on ABC. Then all of a sudden, they decided not to pick it up and then disappeared. Now we're hearing that it's reappearing. So that's one property that's being talked about. Powers was on the fast track. Everyone on the internet was discussing this thing. Like, we can't wait for Powers. Now we're hearing Powers might be actually returning. And Why the Last Man? Another property, another series I absolutely loved. Now that's back on the auction block, allegedly. So, Dow, quickly, what have you heard? What are your thoughts? Are we going to ever – are any of these properties going to see the light of day? And format will we see them?
Well, Powers is my certainty because they've already done a pilot and a half and rewrite and reshoot and do this and do that. Powers is going to make it on in one shape or – if anything, Powers is going to end up to be like Aquaman was, where, you know, it's not going to show up here, so we're going to just put it on iTunes or put it on Apple TV, and all of a sudden it's the number one downloaded thing. You know, that's what Powers is going to be, okay? The Jessica Jones one, I'll believe it when I see it. There's been so many starts and stops with that. I'll believe it when I see it. Now, the Why the Last Man one, and that's a curious one, all right? And I'll just say it like this. If I'm someone like Oprah, or I'm someone like running an Oxygen Network, Lifetime, you know, something, that is a series that is, that should be, if they ever wanted to explore science fiction themes, if they ever wanted to go a fantasy action adventure that was female-centric, that should be the one that they would jump at, all right? You know HBO would love to do it. It's just they're looking at cost, you know, cost for doing this. But it's relatively – it's the most disappointing one just because I think it would be the easiest one for them to put on. In my opinion, it would be easy to do that, all right? And that one, either being a fan of the book, being a fan of York, Agent 355, being a fan of that, I'd love to see it on TV. I just don't have hope for it right now because we've had so many stops and starts with it. Back to you.
Yeah, you know, I have to say, I have to agree with most of your synopsis on this one. I think that, well, first of all, Powers, like you said, that was already set to go. That was on FX. Everyone was under the impression, you know, Bendis was involved, Brian Michael Bendis, who was the creator of Powers, the comic. We were under the impression that this was set in stone. But then, as you just said, then there was talk about the suits. They didn't like what they saw. A pilot was already filmed. It has yet to make it to the internet, which I'm surprised. You know, we haven't seen just how bad it was allegedly. And for those who may not be familiar with Powers the Comic, essentially it's a superhero crime noir police procedural drama. Think of Gotham Central, NYPD. We're talking about something that they would be familiar with on television. Something like Law and Order. Law and Order with a superhero background, you know, where superheroes are powers are somewhat outlawed, and one of the main characters used to have powers. He has powers, but they're hidden. Well, actually, both of them end up having powers. A male with his female partner, and actually, everyone's under the impression that the female partner was going to be played by what's her face from Battlestar Galactica, because she would have been perfect for that. She would have been perfect for that.
Starbuck.
You know what it is. Right. The actress that plays Starbuck, I can't think of her name right now, but she has kind of a tomboyish, hardcore appeal. And wasn't it talked about that she was pretty much set for that? Or you know, what happened with that? I mean, I remember she even had bought comics. I mean, someone even said that they saw her in a comic shop with Powers comics in her hand. And that led to, you know, we don't know if that's true, but I heard that.
But there it is. It's all hearsay. You get 20 million different reports. I remember the show. We did a show, and this was when Max was still here, when they first announced it, and we all said that she'd be perfect for it. And then, like, 2 seconds before the show begins, they announced that it was a different actress. And you went off for about 10 minutes. About the suits in Hollywood and how could they mess this up, you know? Hey, that's it. It's Hollywood. It's suits. We could all play fantasy casting all we want. We could try. Until we see the finished product in our hands or we see it in television or we see it, you're going to keep on getting rumors all over the place. Hi, Guardians of the Galaxy. I see what you're doing there with Star-Lord, by the way. You know, like I said, fantasy casting. Until we see the finished product, we can speculate all we want. We can't. It's why we have a show like this, so we can do speculation. Say, that's dumb. That's brilliant. That's stupid. What are they thinking? You know, they just got to get themselves together for 3 months and get a finished product out there. It's easy for us to moan about it, but then you're going to bring up later the YouTube thing those two Static fans did. You know, they got themselves together and went, we can do this. Let's do this now. Problem is Hollywood doesn't think like that. Let's get the money together. Let's do this now. No. We're thinking about doing it. Now let's put it in pre-treatment. Now after pre-treatment, let's do a rewrite. Now after a rewrite, let's do casting. You know what? I don't like her in that role. Let's do casting this way. You know what? Let's do... And by that time, 7 months has passed. Frustrating. That's what it is. Frustrating.
Yeah, just for our audience, I was thinking of Katie Sackhoff. Katie Sackhoff was the actress, or is the actress, that was best known for her portrayal of Starbuck in the reboot for Battlestar Galactica, and she won accolades for that. And actually now she's on another series of a totally different nature that I actually like. But it's so far removed from the sci-fi genre, Longmire. She's on Longmire now. So I already knew that, well, she's on Longmire. It's probably highly unlikely she's going to be on Powers. But she would have been a perfect person to play the female lead and Powers, but at least we're hearing that it hasn't gone away, so they're still trying to work it out. It would be a difficult – it's difficult to do, maybe for episodic television. I'm not sure. And also, why The Last Man, as you just said, it's a dystopic drama. I mean, for those who are unfamiliar with this kind of thing, it basically deals with a society that's of a negative nature, or you know what a utopia is? It means an ideal society. Where dystopia would be a society that's not so ideal. You know, when you think of Blade Runner was very much a dystopic reality. So in this case, Why the Last Man deals with, you know, if all the men on the planet were killed by way of some mysterious illness, and there's just only women left, and better yet, there's only one man left, Yorick Brown, hence why the Last Man. Actually, there's two males left. Yorick Brown, hence the why of Why the Last Man, and his chimp, Ampersand. His chimp, who is a male, and Yorick are the remaining males on the planet. Now, some might think this would be a heaven sent. Not so much. That's what makes it dystopic. You start to see, you know, when women have said this before, many women, I shouldn't say all women, but many women have said, well, if we ran things would be better, things would be calm, there would be peace. In this adventure, not so much. Women get quite grimy when there's no men around. They start to go into the behavioral cadences of men, which makes this a fascinating tale. And what's his face from the Transformer movies? Wasn't he connected to this a long time ago?
Yeah, Shia LaBeouf was slated, again, like I said, fantasy casting. He was once slated to be Yorick Brown in this. And I was like, okay, you know what? That was around the time he did that, not Source Code. He did that one with the CIA computer. And he had to run around.
Yeah,
he did that movie. So that was the first rumor. So, you know, hey, I'll believe it when I see it. Let's put it that way. I'm not trying to be pessimistic, folks. It's just after you've gotten your hopes up so many times, yeah, let me see a finished product first.
All right, let's go to a quick groove, gentlemen. We got about 11 minutes left. I do want to talk about something that might actually be – I was going to talk about the five properties that comic book resources put out there that are not superhero DC properties that they think should be given the silver screen treatment. But I want to talk about Justice League Dark as a film. Now, Guillermo del Toro is connected to this thing. We got to talk about this. I don't know what Daryl knows about this, but – you know what? We'll save it after the break. Justice League Dark might be a film forthcoming. That's another one. Like you said, these fantasies, people already have names. They have people attached to it. You hear about people writing these scripts. It's greenlit. It's tracked a certain way. And then it goes up in a puff of smoke. Be that as it may, we still have to groove. This is MC Frontalot. Good old Clyde. Good old Clyde. We'll be back in a few moments, folks. Let's groove.
That's how all the trouble started.
You naughty thing.
Radio.
Okay, folks, we're back once again. Good old Clyde, good old Clyde. Folks, a few more moments of the Comic Shop. Next up, we have Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. I want to talk about this Guillermo del Toro story that he is essentially writing Justice League Dark for the film treatment. Now, for those who are unfamiliar with Justice League Dark, it's essentially putting the more magical occult superheroes or occult heroes under one umbrella. Just as you have Batman, Superman, and the Flash for JLA, the Justice League Dark as a comic book is another version of the JLA, except it has DC heroes, but they're the occult heroes. The Swamp Thing and Constantine and those heroes, the ones that are a little funkier with their magical prowess. So now this really, when you think about it, Guillermo would be the right guy to do this kind of quirky kind of film. Now, has it been greenlit? I don't know. I just know it's being talked about like it's a real thing. Daryl, is this a real thing or what?
Hey, according to Del Toro, it's a real thing. He's laying out his plan. The one thing, and you guys just heard me go on a whole diatribe just now. The one thing that Del Toro does that I respect is when he puts his mind to something, he's going to do it. He's going to treat it like, yeah, I got to go for this. I can do this. I got it. I got the go-ahead. Let me just go ahead. Here's my thoughts. He will have storyboards. He will have a script pre-treatment. He'll have all of that laid out and say, okay, Hollywood, here's my idea. Take a look at A, B, C, D, and E. There it goes. Take a look at it. Tell me if it's feasible. And if you don't believe me, yo, Hellboy wasn't Hellboy until Del Toro got involved in it. You know? Hey, people were like, well, I don't know if he could do horror. Well, have you seen the trailers for Mama? Oh, you know, this is a dude, when he sets his mind to it, he's going to go for it. And would it be a kick in the head a little bit to get Justice League Dark before we get Justice League? I'm just saying. Back to you.
Yeah, well, you know, I want the captain to weigh on this because he's been saying that he felt that the JLA, you know, the regular JLA should come out first. But some are saying that this might be a better move on the part of DC because in order to distinguish DC from Marvel, Marvel has yet to put out an occult hero film, really. They have yet to do that. Better yet, an occult team film. This will be maybe one upmanship on the part of DC to put out something that's kind of quirky and offbeat. And what I want to know is, first of all, will it be called Justice League Dark? That would be chutzpah in that. If you call it JLA Dark, have it as some kind of a cult film, Zatanna, Dead Man, all these heroes, and then actually have it in the same universe as the regular JLA. Will it be a connective tissue? Actually, this might work in a totally different way than how Marvel has done it. That might be a better way for a JLA movie to go down if they have a JLA Dark, the occult version, and then have that as connective tissue for the regular JLA.
I don't know.
I don't know if they're that. You know, is it going to be just a separate thing, or is it going to be connected to the rest of the DC universe?
Well, I think definitely he's the right director to do a lot of these movies. You know, he's definitely that good. My only problem is, you know, one of the reasons why superhero movies work, not all of them, but the majority of them, the concept is built up into the newosphere already. A lot of the people know the characters even without them really knowing the characters. What does that mean? People know about Wonder Woman, but they might not know exactly how Wonder Woman actually came into being. But they know about Wonder Woman. So you drop a Wonder Woman movie, people go see it. It's built in already. Now you go drop JLA Dark.
great director. I think it does okay. But does it do as big numbers as Batman or something like that? I don't think so. I think these individuals, at this given point, they want with something like that, just naming it JLA, they want big numbers. They want $800 million. They want $1 billion. That's what they want. I don't think this is the right one to get it first from that standpoint, if that's the way they're going. If it's going to be a February or March movie, then that's different. You know, you take it along the lines of Watchmen, you do it something like that, you know, with this type of thing, that's fine. And if that works good enough for you, that's okay. That's what you want. I don't know necessarily that's what they want. That's why I'm a bit skeptical with them saying, okay, if this is the case, let's get this first. Because not to diss these individuals, but I have to diss these individuals. One of the biggest problems with the Green Lantern situation was that it wasn't so much that the movie was just bad. No one knew who he was. I ran into droves of people. Who was Green Lantern? Why should I go see it? Now, if you go ahead and you say JLA Dark, you know, the people go, what's that? The regular naysayers, what's that? Well, I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. But if you drop a regular JLA movie, you say Flash, Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, whatever. People know of it. It's built in. That's just my process. Maybe I'm thinking too much, and I could be thinking too much. The movie, in my opinion, would be great because he is that good. He is, as they would say, he is the man. The movie would be great. But sometimes we see great product, and it's just, eh, what happened? How come it didn't do better? How come more people didn't see it? You know? Sometimes great product is also done, doesn't get the light of day also. That's just me. That's just my thinking on it.
Well, we're going to have to start closing down the shop, gentlemen, but I do want to say something real, real brief. Under normal circumstances, I would agree with the Capitol on this one, but I just think that Guillermo's reputation is what it is. He's great for this kind of movie. Iron Man really wasn't that well known, but it was allowed to introduce the rest of the whole Marvel Universe, so you might need something quirky and offbeat instead of just rushing in into a JLA, because now there's such a rush for this movie to do well. There's a whole adversarial thing with Marvel with the Avengers and JLA. There's all that going on that you might have to pull it back a little bit and bring in a movie that's quirky, that has references to JLA without being JLA. Then you drop the JLA. Sometimes you got to pull back in order to move forward. I'm just thinking. All right, gentlemen, Daryl, as always, we appreciate the support. We got to do it again next week, more stuff that we left at the table. And we got to go next door to kick it again after featuring Captain Kirk. Folks, it's been real. Check us out next door. Enjoy.
Spock with a beard?
I think not.
About me getting the best of you, huh?
Actually, I was thinking of that poor devil you fed to the dogs today, D'Artagnan. And I was wondering what Dumas would make of all this.
Come again.
Alexandre Dumas, he wrote The Three Musketeers.
Yes, of course, Doctor.
I figured you must be an admirer. You named your slave after his novel's lead character. Now, if Alexandre Dumas had been there today, I wonder what he would have made of it.
You doubt he'd approve, huh?
Yes, his approval. approval would be a dubious proposition at best.
Soft-hearted Frenchie.
An exemple de mise black.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to issue this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a logger.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, D-Bird, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Salutations, folks. Good tidings. Your host, D-Bird, a.k.a. the Afro Nerd, is here, and the captain is waiting in advance. Folks, welcome to Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. The call-in number, once again, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Listen, guess what? That was a clip from Django, but I guess you probably figured that out already. Django Unchained, the comic book. I just got it in the mail yesterday, and it's actually more that was left on the cutting room floor. If you look at the foreword by Quentin Tarantino himself, there's actually more in the comic than what was seen in the film. So he's saying that he's allowed to actually give you his all in the comic books. I would suggest that you pick it up. It's courtesy of DC/Vertigo. Django Unchained, the comic, number one, just released. All right, folks, listen. We've got a groove first before we get into the heavy colloquium or discourse. This funky tune, funky blues tune, is from the late, great Gil Scott Heron. Me and the Devil. Me and the Devil. Let's groove, folks. We'll be right back. Keep on dogging me around. great Gil Scott Heron. Me and the Devil. Me and the Devil. Folks, it's Afro Nerd. Better yet, Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. Captain, it's time. Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Howdy, Sir Afro Nerd. How's it going?
It's going somewhere. Don't know yet, but it's going somewhere.
All right,
listen,
then.
We got an hour. We got an hour. So we got to make the best of it, folks. A lot to talk about. We'll probably tap into some stuff that we left on the table from last week's midweek review show. We haven't done a Blue Area segment in a moment, so in a while, I should say. So we're going to do one. Actually, it's more of a Comic Shot thing, but hey, Comic Shot, Afro Nerd, it's essentially the same thing. But you know, we sometimes are going to tap into some things that's not always political. So I want to talk about this Static Shock trailer that I was actually found out courtesy of Shadow and Act. Sergio Mim's Shadow and Act highlighted this trailer that's part of a web series. So we'll talk about that later on in the show. First up, folks, you know, well, even before we even get into the topics, I'm just going to just riff a little bit, Captain, if you don't mind. A couple of things
ready,
that came
sir.
To it came to my mind that really dampened my spirits. One, we talk about minstrelsy. We talk about this madness that's going on in some of our communities. And I heard something yesterday that just broke my heart. I was on the treadmill looking at CNN, and just off the cuff, they mentioned a young man that was stabbed repeatedly. I believe he's going to make it. He's going to make it. But he was stabbed as a part of a gang violence altercation. But the hook of it is that this man, young man, was not a member of any kind of gang. He's handicapped. And they mistook him because he's a deaf person. They mistook him when he, you know, when a deaf person, of course, uses sign language. That's the way that a deaf person communicates. They mistook this young man, Captain, for communicating with his hands as he's supposed to do because of his condition, because of his handicap. They thought he belonged to the wrong sect, I should say. And they repeatedly stabbed him, not knowing that his signing was not some kind of inappropriate or some kind of dissing move because he belonged to some kind of gang. And then when family members and neighbors came out to say, hey, this guy is deaf, they kept on stabbing him. They couldn't stop it. They didn't want to hear that this man was handicapped. He has nothing to do with your foolishness. He will survive. I think he's on the mend. But when you hear this, Captain, we've got to do something. We have to do something. This is the height of absurdity. It's the height of absurdity. And when I talk about this, and people say it's not real, you don't want to talk about, you don't know what you're talking about, maybe you should stop talking about it. This false sense of pride and this political correctness. Now, a young man that's signing because that's part of who he is, being a deaf person. When you can't even, first of all, it's absurd that you can't wear certain clothes. In certain areas, you have to be wary of wearing certain items of clothing because it might be connected, unbeknownst to the wearer. Unbeknownst to the wearer, you could be taken out because you might be wearing red or blue or some other color one day. You have nothing to do with this madness, but you could be caught at the wrong place at the wrong time. And this gentleman, being a deaf man, was caught at the wrong place at the wrong time. Now, he has to be wary of using sign language because of this madness. That's just something that came to my mind. It's something I just want to share with our audience, that something has to be done. What are your thoughts, Captain, on that one? I mean, that's just beyond the pale on that one. Beyond the pale.
Well, this is the second time I'm hearing something about this. I heard something similar to this back in the 90s, around 1996. And they actually, you know, started to shoot after the particular individual. And then they found out later on that the person was deaf. As they always say, gang members can't really shoot that well. Something that the police always say. They really don't shoot. They always miss their targets. They're always shooting somebody else. Their main target, they always miss. So luckily for the individual that they were shooting after, they did not hit. But when I heard about it, it also said there in the small caption that this was bound to happen, that these gang members are just totally out of control. This was in the 90s. Now we come back here now, 2013, full circle. Here we go again, you know, at this given point. It's just a tragedy. It's a tragedy. And that just shows you just have no sensibility of what's going on at all. Or nor do they even care. They're not going to listen to reason out. You can't reason with these individuals. So, you know, sometimes, you know, we get emails and people say, hey, you know, AfroNerd is talking about drones in these neighborhoods and everything. Maybe the great AfroNerd is on to something. You'll listen to drones when the drones begin to let off on you. You will have no choice. That's all I'm saying. I'm just saying. Back over to you, Sir AfroNerd.
Yeah, just to give further edification for our audience, again, this occurred in North Carolina, actually. I'm just going to read something briefly from Fox News. It says, a North Carolina deaf man using sign language was stabbed several times after another man mistook the gestures as gang signs, police say. Terrence Urban Daniels was signing with another deaf man when 22-year-old Robert Jarrell Neal thought he was flashing gang signs. Police say Neal stabbed Daniels with a kitchen knife several times, as witnesses reported seeing the victim trying to defend himself. Daniels was taken to the hospital and is listed in stable condition. Neal has been charged with felony assault on a handicapped person and assault with a deadly weapon with intent to kill, inflicting serious harm, serious injury. My voice is gone from me screaming, stop, stop, leave that man alone. Candace Garrington, a neighbor who witnessed the attack, told MyFox8.com. Garrington said she saw Daniels throw his signs up in self-defense. I'm sorry, throw his hands up in self-defense. Another witness said the victim's face and hands were cut. Police found Daniels in the grass at an intersection suffering from multiple stab wounds. Neal is being held on $500,000 secured bond. He has previously been arrested for assault. Incredible. I mean, it's, wow. I don't know, folks. And then something else I heard before we move along, something local in Brooklyn. A young man, this might have been another gang altercation, I would think. Another young man with a 2-year-old child with him. Operative words, 2-year-old child with him, was being chased with the child by a gunman, ends up getting shot as the child was getting shot as well. Everyone survived. But the child was shot in both arms, 2 years old, as well as, I guess, perhaps this is the child's father. I don't know the relation between the child and the adult. But the fact that this person chases down this other person. Listen, I don't know. Maybe this person's worthy of getting chased. I don't know about that. I don't know. But they don't even take a time out when there's a child present. He's holding a 2-year-old toddler. The toddler's got to go as well as the man. And they survive, but this child has been maimed before he even gets a chance to even be a part of life. 2 years old. He has to pay along with the person that was taking care of him at that moment. This is what's going on in our communities, folks. And it's another day. It's another day. Maybe people are going to start paying more to pay closer attention to this kind of stuff because of what happened in Sandy Hook. It appears that it might. Maybe we might get a little brush off because of the absurdity as to what happened in Connecticut. Maybe people are going to look further and look deeper into what's happening in the hood quote unquote the hood. It's incredible. All right, folks, listen. There's still more to talk about. Unfortunately, we have to talk about I got to transition from the madness to more madness, but madness of a different sort. We've been speaking for a few weeks, a few shows about All My Baby's Mamas. And there's an interesting article by way of The Root, Henry Louis Gates' The Root, which is part of the, I think, the Washington Post, I think it's part of the, I think that's also connected to The Root. Anyway, they were weighing in. After all this time, we've been speaking about the business of minstrelsy, that it literally is an industry. Just as you would go to a GM to buy a car, you can go to a factory and actually see these cars being made. There is a factory of sorts with these kind of reality shows. This, and even beyond that, if you factor in the reality shows, the talk shows, the court shows, everything is based on black dysfunctionalism as product. And no one seems to want to break away from this mold. So anyway, there appears to be, and rightfully so, thankfully, a petition is going on to not have All My Baby's Mamas see the light of day. But it seems like the Oxygen people are very passionate about wanting to put this on the air. They don't seem to be deterred by this growing dissatisfaction from the public that we don't need to see this. We don't need for the black image to be assaulted, and we do not need to see more of these shows. They just keep on producing them. I just happen to glance in the cyber ghetto, as I always call it, Captain, media takeout. I just happen to glance. They said that Lil Wayne's ex-wife is getting her third reality show. They just keep on giving these wayward, out of control, out of pocket, dysfunctional, lower-tier Negroes programs. They can't give them enough. So we'll see what the results of this thing will be. Hopefully it becomes more widespread. But I was unaware that there's yet another show, Captain. Another show called, I think it's called the Best Funerals Ever. Are you familiar with this program?
I never saw the show.
The Best Funerals Ever?
Nor do I want to. But
well,
continue, sir.
Well, you know, what gets me, listen, when I hear about these things, I always hear them as whispers. Anytime that's, maybe I have an anti-minstrel gene, obviously. Because when I hear something, I hear about it as like a whisper. And I dare not go to YouTube to check out the trailers. I just don't live that existence. I don't really have a care for that. I know that these shows are meant to prey on the public's prurient interest, that they're meant to entice. There are accidents waiting to happen. Just as folks can't help themselves from slowing down when an accident is ahead on the highway. They can't. It's human nature to look at gore, even though it's not good for you. Even though it's not good for you, I have mastered the art of not looking at gore. I don't want to see gore. And this is my idea of gore. But it's a business. Money has to be made. And it seems as if folks can't help not to look at things that are really not in their best interest. But this thing with Best Funerals Ever, I don't know what to say about it. We have a caller. Let's get to the call. I'm sure they have something to say about this whole minstrel campaign. Hopefully someone's listening. Finally, after as many years as we've been on the air, Captain, we've been talking about this, and I'll give out more information, more definitive information on this, because I do want our listeners, and listen to us, listen to me, listen to the captain closely. I want you to sign this petition. Please, we cannot continue to just take this without rebuttal. You can't put these crazy dysfunctional shows on and you just shrug your shoulders. No, no, no. No, 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 not this time. All right, let's go to the caller and let's see what's up. Caller, welcome to Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk, 301. What's up? Tell us who you are, where you're calling from.
Yeah, this is B.A. calling from outside of D.C. in Maryland. Thank you for taking my call.
B.A., man.
Yeah, very quickly here.
Practically a family member at this point. What's
yes,
up,
sir.
BA?
Yes. You know, this I never heard of Shorty. You know, he is just not in my demographic. You know, I've never heard of the guy. But let me say this, just from a business, you know, just crunching the numbers, I can guarantee you that the show will be a hit fiscally for Oxygen TV. It's low production costs, high profit margin. That's why they're doing it. The baby mamas in there ain't getting a dime for being in that show. It will make money. It will be a hit. And, yes, we may be successful in stopping it from seeing the airwaves. But the next show will come along that will be more outrageous. I mean, because after Flavor Flav did his run on reality show, and, you know, for VH1 and that spurn, produced, I don't know, tens of different reality shows that spun off that. There's no shame in that game. Zero. And furthermore, and I'll end here, and I'm not going to call any names. I'm just in here. It's a lot of people we respect, right, who live that lifestyle of Shorty Low. And I ain't going to name no names, but they're out there. They're people we respect, we admire, and they got baby mamas galore. And they claim they take care of their kids and whatnot. They got multiple baby mamas, and they're married. So, yeah, I'm not going to, you know, go in too deep on Shorty Low, because I know that there's a lot of people out there living that lifestyle. A lot of them. And I think it's deplorable, despicable. And if we start naming some names, black folk will come out the woodwork defending them.
Well, listen, BA, you're right on point as always. I guess my problem is unfortunately, when you have minority status in this society, the imagery is damaging for the rest of us. We realize that this is what's going on. I mean, listen, they might say they have white dysfunctional shows, and I think some of them do, but I just don't think it affects the quote unquote white image the way that this will affect the minority image, or in this case specifically the black image. If they're going to start to boycott this show, if there seems to be no way to stop them from doing this, there should at least be an agreement that, okay, you're going to put this show on, put two shows that are diametrically different than this show for the sake of balance. If you're going to embarrass us, at least balance it out. And I don't think too many people are looking at that perspective, because there's too much on, let's just get it off. We want this show off. Okay, if that's not going to work too much anymore. For some reason, we've lost our power. I think years ago, we had more power. Now, I mean, we've allowed this industry to flourish, BA. That's the problem. It is as you said, it's a business model. It's been allowed to flourish. After this show, you have The Best Funeral Ever, which is another black-centric show with Negroes dancing at funerals. I mean, the funerals, this show, I've only read about it. The show is so crazy with black folks looking wild at funerals. We can't catch a break, BA. We can't catch a break. How many shows do we need to show that there's a segment of the black community that's crazy? How many do you need? They can't stop making them.
This is why I'm on the phone with you. Turn it off. Turn it off. Boycott TV, period. Turn the whole damn thing off. Don't look at any of it. I get my information from you and, you know, some people who I respect what they got to put out there. I respect their intellect, which is why I listen to you when I get the chance to. I do not. It's 7 o'clock prime time Sunday. It's some foolishness on the air right now that I can imbibe and I can be crazy for. I don't like basketball junk, wives. You know, these are middle class, upper middle class, well-to-do, wealthy black women, you know, and the Atlanta junk too. I mean, and all they do is fight and act like who can be the most ghetto trick in the room. That's all it is. You know, I don't watch any of it. I boycott it all. And I think we should start boycotting the sponsors too. Okay? Take the profit motive, the business model out of the loop, out of the game. Don't watch that mess. Okay? And when we go to school and you wonder why the girls are slapping each other around in school, why they fighting like cats and dogs. Because they get it by watching Carmelo Anthony's wife and Shaq wife act a damn fool. And we don't understand why we got so a high suspension rate in our public schools. You know, why these kids getting put out of school for 10 days and whatnot? Because they're watching this garbage. And these are not ghetto low-grade women. These are supposedly fine, with the hair weave, pretty light-skinned girls. You know what I mean? You know, it's crazy, man. As I said, cut it all off. Just cut it off. But, you know, hey, I agree with you, D-Bert. I just want to listen to your show as always. You are a breath of fresh air, you and Captain Kirk. I like the way you come. I like your music. I'm not really into comic books, but I like to hear you talk about the comics. I like to hear your take on certain things, okay? I would prefer to watch you on mainstream terrestrial radio or cable television. I would love to see you like on AMC with a comic book show, even if it's just once a month or once every 6 months, D-Bert, talk about comics from a African-American. Not when you say African-American, just your perspective, whatever that is. Put your perspective on it. I would enjoy seeing that.
Well, B.A.,
okay?
B.A., listen, your words mean a lot to us. Trust me on that. And we're working on something right now. And listen, I've met listeners, like I shout out AfroBrit. The young lady comes from England. Listen, this is how deep this goes. She comes from England. I'm sure she didn't come just to see me. But she came to New York, and we politicked, as they say on the street. We had a discussion, and she said, hey, we need to have an Afro nerd in UK, and we're going to work on that. But what's happening now is that ultimately we're going to have to do this ourselves. She told me, you're going to have to do this by yourself. You're going to do it on your own. When we talk later on, which I think Sergio's on hold now. Sergio on his site, actually, first of all, Sergio's site is blowing up. Shadow and Act is being mentioned by Nelson George and by Warrington Hudland. These are industry insiders, and he's aware of that. And I'm very proud that one of our own is moving forward from the internet. He highlights this young man who he wants to see his comic book hero, Black Hero, on the screen. It would be an excellent story. It would be a no-brainer. But anytime it's black, it's a problem. So somehow this young man is going to do it for himself on the web because probably someone's going to pay attention because it's on the internet. But we're going to have to do what we're going to have to do on the internet. That's our only resolution right now. We're going to have to do what we want to see. We're going to have to do it ourselves. Let me go to, I think this is our friend from Chi-Town. Let's get into it.
Yes, it is.
Sir, is that you?
Once again, I am here. Very quickly, a couple of things. I absolutely agree with the previous caller that they're not, first of all, keep in mind that this Shanti Low is a one-hour special. It's not a series. Of course, the idea is that if the special was successful, they would probably put it into a series. At this point right now, it's probably going to be a monster hit, as the previous caller said. All this controversy is making people interested to see the show. They want to see what all the fuss is about. I dare say that Shadow and Act was probably instrumental for people being aware of this, since we wrote about this a long time ago. Oops. And the other thing, too, is that keep in mind that I have a friend who works in the DA office in Atlanta, where this guy lives, this Shanti Low guy. And I said, whatever it is. And I said, do you know this guy?
Doesn't matter.
Right, doesn't matter. And I said, do you know this guy? Because she works with child cases, family law, in the DA department, child parental payments. I forgot what's the term for it. You know, child support. And she said, yeah, she knows this guy. She's had several cases with this guy about a lack of child support. And you got to realize that all this show is a setup. He's not living with these women. He has these women that probably, most of them probably live in different states. And he put them all together and rented this house for them and created this idea that they all live together in this house, which is not true. It's just created for the show. So, once again, if this thing's successful, of course it'll go into a series. It's basically a pilot. But it's caused so much controversy and so many people are interested. And as the previous caller said, the reason why you see so many of these reality shows is that they're incredibly cheap to make. You know, the networks, cable networks, they're being priced out. Talent is too expensive. If you have a hit show on television, a sitcom, or a drama show, and if the show's a hit, you could wind up paying the lead actors six figures a week, an episode. It's too much. For six figures, you could do a whole season of one reality show. So there's more money to be made in that. There's no syndication value in it because nobody wants to see a reality show again once they've seen it. But it still is money in that. So in the Best Funeral show, I wrote about that on Shadow and Act. And what I was told by people who live in Dallas, where the funeral home is based, is that those type of crazy, like the barbecue theme burial funeral.
God, take me away. Please take me away.
No, the coffin was shaped like a giant grill. And they had the pallbearers were wearing those chef's hats.
Wow.
And there was this whole guy, these women in a Vegas show dancing with these giant slabs, makeup slabs of barbecue ribs dancing around. You have to see it to believe it. But what they say yeah, you really do. But what they say is that this funeral home is known for this kind of stuff. But it's very rare, actually. They may do these kind of funerals two or three times a year. Most of the time, it's a regular funeral. But because it's TV, because it's a reality show, and I guarantee you how these shows work is that someone comes up with the idea and they go around to different funeral homes around the country and they basically audition to be the one picked for the show. So this Dallas Golden Gate Funeral Home in Dallas, they probably sold them that they were the people. They probably showed them the most outrageous funeral they have ever done, and the producer said, fine, you're the one. But it's all an act. And I wouldn't be surprised if someone came in for a regular funeral and the TV producers came in and said, we'll give you the money if you go crazy. And
wow.
That's probably what happens. You know, whatever you see on TV.
Aren't they talking about this being like an extremely popular show now? That this Best Funeral Ever is like, it's a hit, isn't it, in some way?
Well, I mean, it's a hit, I guess, for cable. Remember, you don't need a large audience to be a hit on cable. You really don't. You can get 200,000 people to watch your show. It's a hit. You know, and that show comes on Sunday nights. And it goes up against, say, what's going on? Downton Abbey on PBS,
which gets millions of viewers.
Millions of viewers, right? It's the biggest hit PBS has had in maybe a decade. You're talking apples and oranges. For a cable show, particularly like for Oxygen, one of the smaller ones like Oxygen or Oprah's Own, or Lifetime, you don't really need a whole lot of people for it to be a hit.
Wow. Listen, Serge, I want to put you on hold for a minute because I want to bring you in on another topic, on a Blue Area moment, actually. This young man that has a web series from the late Dwayne McDuffie, who we interviewed a few years ago, he is sorely needed. When you start to see this stuff, what's coming out and the fact that our lack of representation, even in comic books,
He was the man for that, so he's gone. But hopefully we will see an actual Static Shock movie. It would make sense. It's a teenage black hero that gets electric powers. Why can't that be on the CW? And this young man is doing it on his own. So I think we have to acknowledge you for highlighting this web series. So I want to do that in a moment. Let's go to a quick groove. I'm going to put you on hold, Sergio, and I want you to kind of take the lead on this Static Shock web trailer that you have on your website. Hold on 1 second. Let's take a quick groove. Ladies and gentlemen, again, you're listening to After Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. This is a new gem. I'm trying to give you folks some new music. So this is by a group called Tall Black Guy. I should say a rap artist. But this actually isn't a rap. It's more of an instrumental. Tall Black Guy and Durando. I Don't Want to Leave. I Don't Want to Leave. We'll be back, folks. Let's get into it. Let's groove.
I love you, baby. I want to spend my life. Feel good. To feel good.
Back once again, Tall Black Guy and Durando. I Don't Want to Leave. I Don't Want to Leave. Except if it's on a reality show, then I want to leave. But again, I Don't Want to Leave, giving you the best of urban alternative, black rock, afro punk, you know, the good stuff. We're talking to Sergio Mims, friend of the show, one of the forces behind Shadow and Act. And, you know, I was pleasantly surprised to see this trailer on your site, Sergio, of a young man that seems to be doing it for himself, pretty much what we're doing. It really is, even if you're not into comic book stuff, Serge, even if you're not into it, you have to give proper to this young man for just, like, doing it on his own. You know, there's so many, it's so easy, and I hate to racialize everything, but it's so easy for people to put together a white hero vehicle. Arrow can be approved in a second. Amazon, which is going to be, I guess, a retelling of Wonder Woman, is going to be approved in a second. Dwayne McDuffie created Static Shock. It's a perfect story that could be put out from a comic book, from a cartoon, to the silver screen or the small screen, and yet, you know, we're too busy shucking and jiving in funeral homes. We're not special enough to have powers, I guess. But this young man is doing it on his own. So just tell us a little bit about what's on your site now with this Static Shock web series trailer.
Well, like I said, this was put up just a few days ago. And one of the things that we wanted to the main reason why the site was created was to give a voice to black filmmakers, either in studio or Hollywood, let people know what's going on in black film, black web series. Black web series are the hit thing. They're the big thing. Because just like you said, CW's not doing this stuff. Fox is not doing this stuff. So it's up to independent filmmakers to make this stuff on their own and put it out on the web where they'll get an audience. Right, and this guy created this thing, this Static Shock. I must tell you, I had never heard of Static Shock before. I didn't know anything about it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's getting a lot of attention, you know, and it's just wonderful that we have this opportunity to have a guy present this and to have an audience for it. You know, a couple months ago, see, I didn't know there was this alternative Spider-Man who's black. I didn't know this.
Oh, yeah. That's big, too.
Right? I didn't know this. So this guy went and made basically a trailer, or sort of like a mini episode of the beginning of this black Spider-Man. And when I saw it, it knocked me out. I posted it. I knocked it out. And I remember writing, said, I didn't know Spider-Man was black, and then people had explained to me, no, there's an alternative universe, and you don't understand. Well, okay, look, fine. Okay, fine. But the fact that I saw this, and I put it up on the site, and it got a lot of attention, and that's the whole point. The whole point is to have people have an opportunity, particularly people to get away from the shucking and the jiving, even though we cover that too. We cover everything. We cover everything, the good, the bad, and the ugly. We cover it all. If it deals with black cinema, if it deals with black television, black media, we cover it. As a matter of fact, today we were having a conversation that a lot of black filmmakers are not happy with us because we don't kiss their ass. And they're kind of afraid of us. The quote was actually that some black filmmakers are, quote, terrified of us because if something is good, we say it's good. If something is bad, we'll say it's bad. We don't kiss your ass because you made a film and you're black. You know. So, as you know, we have very, very vocal commenters. Boy, do we have vocal commenters. Some of them are perhaps borderline insane.
Well,
I know
what that's like. And I'll tell you one other thing, Sergio, which is important. Is that listen? What you're doing, let them be fearful of what you're doing. Let them be fearful because what it means is that you will have to get off your lazy behinds and learn how to write, and learn how to put together a worthy project. Django set the tone now because now you have a white person who essentially, I said this before, who essentially provided a love letter to the black community. If you want to look at it that way, to show you how it's done. So I'm seeing other websites. They can't stop talking about Django. Heck, I can't stop talking about Django.
Well, you know, the thing about
it
is, I think you hit it on the head. I think those who really don't like Django, who have said about it, I think what really bothers them is that it wasn't a black filmmaker who made it. I think that's what when it comes right down to it, that is what really bothers them. It could be the same exact movie with the same exact dialogue. It was made by a black filmmaker. I think a lot of people, like recently, Tavis Smiley has spoken out against the movie. Of course he would.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He went over the top. He was outraged, of course, because I'm quite sure none of the people in the movie kissed his ass and appeared on his show, whatever, you know. So what happens is that, and as I said before, the only filmmakers, black filmmakers, at this point right now, who I think could have made Django, were the Hughes brothers.
About to say that. I think those are the only might have been to pull this off.
Aren't
they doing something now? So,
well, the Alan Hughes has Broken City. This is on his own. That's the movie with Mark Wahlberg and Russell Crowe. That's next. That comes on next Friday.
Right.
This Friday, and that's like a film noir mystery, right? And the thing about it is that that's the reason why I think they could have done it, because look at their body of work. They did Men's Society, Dead Presidents,
From Hell.
They did Book of Eli, Broken City, that Alan did, and you know, for the last 2 years, they were trying to do a live action version of Akira. That's what
right.
they would spend. They spent like a year trying to put that film together, a live action version. See, they have that sort of broad mindset. You know, they didn't do Minister Society 2. You know,
right?
They did From Hell, which I still think is a brilliant movie. You know,
sir,
Book of Eli.
We're gonna have to move along. Unfortunately, we got about 13
okay.
minutes. So. We'll pick it up again, but I definitely – that's all right. We're going to have to revisit, you know, this discussion again. But for the listening audience, Shadow and Act. And let me know when you want to disclose more information about where this thing is going. You mentioned that there's other things you want to – you know, at a
oh, yeah, yeah.
date.
You know, something may be happening sometime this year. I don't know when, but – It looks like something big is going to happen soon. I don't know what yet. You know, I can't tell you for sure. But
right.
I do know
right.
that our numbers keep going up and up and up. And pretty soon, we could start hitting 1 million hits. So God knows what's going to happen.
Wow.
All right. Okay.
Well, listen.
We'll talk to you later.
We will continue to support you. Appreciate it, sir. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you so much. All right. Again, Sergio Mims from Chi-Town. Check out Shadow and Act, folks. Shadow and Act. Courtesy of IndieWire for now, IndieWire.com. All right, listen, the captain, I want to, you know, let's get into this issue of memes. You sent me an email. Now, folks know, the folks that have been listening to us for quite a while now, we always go on and on about tropes. We use the term tropes and memes incessantly. But actually, the captain sent me an email about what a meme is. There was an article about the definition of a meme and really getting into what a meme can do. And I want you to kind of go into that for the audience, Captain, regarding this email. Very fascinating.
Well, this information is from the scientist Tim Rifford, who does a lot of what essentially he does psychic research, totally from a scientific standpoint. Not spookism, okay? Not hocus pocus. Solely from a scientific standpoint. He is a scientist. So there's a lot of research involved. So, and that's what this comes from. He also has written 3 books on remote viewing. What essentially remote viewing is sending your awareness and to a distance and being able to see what's going on. He has written 3 books on that. So let's get into it. What he says. Memes, mental software. Ideas have the power to spread through a population almost as if they have a life of their own. It was Dr. Richard Dawkins, the eminent biologist, who first called these contagious ideas memes. They have also been called mental viruses. Okay. Gets into remote viewing now. In remote viewing parlance, positive memes are used to inculcate the remote viewing state of mind are referred to as new mental software or success software. They switch off negative mindsets that keep individuals in a state of anxiety. Inhibiting remote viewing, if you imagine a world full of infectious mental viruses and their mutants, which use humans as their breeding ground, and carriers of which are passed on to their other humans by word of mouth, culture, the media, or biophysical means, you can see the sense in which our world is shaped by memes. Table manners, throwing frisbees, wearing fashion shoes are all memes. Our culture is built up from a complex composite of memes that define who we are, what we think, and what we do. They are permanent in defining society. It might be thought that we all are free, we all have free will and can do whatever we want. Unfortunately, the situation is not so simple. People can only think and do what they know. In my view, means are biophysical fields that mold the brain's neural network, i.e., the ideas are carried in the biophysical field of the mean, are transferred into patterning of the neural network of our brains. The means that comprise our culture are hardwired into our brain. As explained earlier, language is itself a set of means found in the biophysical field. Now, what does this mean? This means, essentially, to put it simply, plain view, bad habits are hard to break because they're hardwired into you. That's it. So when we talk about lower tier behavior and those things thereof, this behavior is hardwired into individual via means. So it gives them, this is the problem. This is why smoking, heavy drinking is so hard to break. That's what it is. And this is the scientific information on it. So when we speak here, just to let you know, we're not pulling things out of thin air and we're making it up. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, what you said is very important. And we always use the term memes and how frustrating they are to deal with because they are memes. When we talk about this whole deal with minstrelsy and coonery, neo-coonery, neo-minstrelsy, you know, when I played a clip last week of my appearance on Open Line and I used the term neo-coonery, they were like taken back. What is that? I've had discussions with colleagues as of recently. I have discussions with people who, when you talk about Steve Harvey, and some folks hate and shouting out Q Storm, he doesn't really like it when I get on Steve Harvey. And he has a point about folks staying in their own lane. Steve Harvey has his lane. But because of memes, we can't seem to break out of certain molds because, well, that's what you people do. That's what you people are about. And we have folks that seem to accept this, and some of them aren't even aware of it. I've spoken to people, more and more folks, that aren't aware that these things are man-made, that they're embedded, and life is better and bigger and more bold, and there's more things going on with even black folk beyond these memes. There are things going on beyond these tropes. But when you talk this way, it might as well be a two different language. I'm talking about people who are very intelligent, very well-mannered. But when you bring up, well, don't you think that Steve Harvey might be a minstrel? Do you think that his diction is poor? Or, you know, what's going on? And I break it down. They look at you like you're crazy. And there's an article, actually, there's an article that I saw on some person's website, some blogger, who broke down her issues with Steve Harvey. And the crux of her argument, I couldn't agree anymore. Her crux of her argument is Steve Harvey does not allow for critical thinking. That's his issue. He defecated on atheists. He tells women how they should act and behave. Like thinking like a woman is a problem. You have to think like a man. Think about that. He's telling women to think like a man, as if there's something wrong with thinking like a woman. So he's entitled to his lane. I'm shouting out Q Storm. He's entitled to his lane, but he does not allow for critical thinking. He doesn't really allow for that. And that's my problem with mystical blacks, lower tier blacks, these other branches from the African tree that they do not allow for critical thinking. They don't allow for criticism, because if you do, you're a hater. The term hater was the greatest invention ever created, and I've said this before, because it dispels critical analysis. It dispels the ability to really say, wait a minute, man, you know, you might be wrong on something on this one. No, you're a hater. And it shuts you down. It is an excellent invention. Doesn't mean that it's right, though. We got about 3 minutes, Captain. Listen, we might as well call it now, because I wanted to display more music. These shows, as much as I love them, and we speak for 2 hours straight, they're an hour per show. So, until Wednesday, folks, more discussion. But, again, I don't have the actual website. You know, if you go to Africa Radio, our Facebook presence, there's a link to sign this petition to not have this All My Baby's Mama see the light of day. I don't know how successful it would be, but we need for our voices to be heard, Captain. We need people to know you cannot continue to disrespect our image. This must stop. Other people, other ethnicities would not allow this. Why are we allowing this? Maybe it's because this mental software that the captain has just displayed, just talked about memes. Maybe because we're stuck and we're embedded in a meme. Not unlike a YouTube clip. You embed a YouTube clip, it's not going anywhere. And unfortunately, if we do not speak up against this neo-coonery, it will become a meme. I think it's already a meme. They can't stop giving these shows to these goons. Sorry, folks. All right. Once again, giving you the best of urban alternative music, creating our own meme. This is LaRange. This is a progressive hip-hop artist. LaRange. The cut's called Alone, featuring Blue. LaRange. See you on Wednesday, folks. It's been real.
I stood for a moment in the darkness. Then I saw the glowing cigarette. I snapped on the light.
Well, I guess words aren't always important.
Well, do we have to sit here and stare at each other?
Okay, I can't sing.
I can't.
She sat up, smoothing her dress down with one hand and holding a gun in the other.
There was a man who got a stadium, a man who got a forum, a field, an auditorium, and one who got none. A man who got riches, the bitches, glamour, the blitz, the rich, fits, the Roxy, and a god who got none. I once knew a man who couldn't afford Japan, his land, his perfect future, his promise, even his son. All he wanted was his home, his family, transportation, a weekend, maybe vacation, from slaving to making his own. His hill was built in the 50s, and I was covered like the sunken pyramid that the King Doja once called his home. I do belong in my skin. Then again, it's just flesh. I'm 29. I can't wait to see my daughter make a mess. Hey, yo.
Not the music lover I thought you were.
A music lover I am. I also have a great love for life.